You're tuned in to People's Tribune Radio. I'm Kenny Shook.
We need to have literally millions of people out there talking about their vision, because until we get a critical mass of people in this country looking at the same vision, looking in the same direction, we won't be able to get to that next stage of the development of the movement, which is strategy. How can we make plans? How can we have a strategy if we don't have a common vision?
People's Tribune Radio provides a source of revolutionary audio programming to people interested in changing society. It's produced in association with the newspaper People's Tribune, the bilingual magazine Tribuno del Pueblo, and Speakers for a New America. On this edition of People's Tribune Radio, we hear from Executive Director of Project South, Jerome Scott. Project South uses popular education to build grassroots leaders, instilling movement-building tools for social and economic justice by connecting local organizing efforts to consciousness, strategy, and vision. Jerome Scott spoke in 2006 at the Capitol Theater in Olympia, Washington, at a Common Ground Relief benefit, where people were raising money to help communities rebuild the New Orleans area.
How y'all doing? I think, first of all, I should congratulate y'all for becoming a nuclear-free zone. It's that kind of activity that's going on in different fronts of struggle throughout the country. And we don't hear about each other. And so many times the community will feel like they're just out there by themselves trying to struggle. And that is the furthest thing from the truth. There's lots of motion and movement developing throughout this country. I just want to talk about three fronts of struggle, and then I want to talk about the whole process of movement building in relationship to those fronts of struggle. And then I would like to talk a little bit about the first U.S. social forum that's happening in Atlanta next year. First, I'd like to start off with the war. It seems to me that the war in Iraq and the pending war in Iran is really symbolic of what our government feels it's free to do anywhere, anytime. It feels like it's free to lie, to cheat, to tell you stuff is going on when it's really not. I mean, it's really symbolic of this whole concept that they put out, that they have been anointed by God. They have a direct link to God, and everything they do is cool because God says it's cool. Now, think about that for a minute. You know, if that was just about anybody else except Bush, we'd try to get them locked up. You know, perhaps give them a few padded cells to live in. But you look at how we got into this war, and now how we continue to lose our young sons and daughters to this war. And actually, you have to wonder, is there any end in sight? Trust me, there will be no end in sight unless we make that end in sight. And there is this developing anti-war movement, and it's not just here in this country, it's throughout the world. The problem with the anti-war movement in this country is that it needs to build more bridges. It needs to build bridges to the people of color community. It needs to build bridges to the immigrant community. You know, and we in those communities need to reach out to the anti-war movement as well. But until we do that, the anti-war movement is not going to be powerful enough to do what it needs to do. Now, the immigrant situation in this country, which we saw literally millions and millions of people demonstrating over the last month or so, is another front of struggle that I think we got to pay some attention to. In that particular struggle, there is a serious effort to divide, particularly the African-American community, from the immigrant community. And here again, what they did to start the war, they're doing to try to bolster up the immigrant opposition that they have to it. They say stuff like, well, the jobs they take No other American won anyway. That's a lie. They're getting construction jobs. We don't want construction jobs. They're working in the food industry and the chicken industry. We don't want those jobs. No, the point is we have been pushed out by the corporations and set up this situation where they can try to make a huge gap between the African-American community and the immigrant community, and therefore play the same trick that they've been playing for years, and that is divide and conquer. This immigration law that they're trying to push through, which is going to make people that support immigrants, they're going to make them criminals as well. I mean, it's very, very similar to the Fugitive Slave Act of the 1850s, you know, where if you aided and abetted a slave, then you became a criminal as well. That act really did bolster the abolitionist movement. I believe that this law, because it goes so wide, is going to backfire also and bolster the immigrant movement in this country and bolster the building of those bridges that need to be built, particularly between the African-American community and the Latino and other immigrant communities. We have to make sure that we put forth serious efforts for building a black-brown coalition in this country. You know, because it's only on being able to work together that we can build up the trust necessary to really unite in this critical time. Also, the Gulf Coast. And I guess when you look at the Gulf Coast and the aftermath of the Gulf Coast, you look at a natural disaster and a man-made disaster. Everybody knew that the levees would not hold. Everybody knew that. Bush knew it. FEMA knew it. Everybody that had any kind of power to do something about it knew it. The question that I think we have to ask, one of the questions is literally thousands of questions. But one of those questions is why? Why did they know it was going to happen and do nothing about it? Oh, they did do something. They cut back on the Army Corps of Engineers budget every year. They cut back on the levy, even trying to just get more support for the levies. They cut back on that. So that's what they did. They not only didn't do anything to prevent this from happening or strengthen the levies, they made the levies even weaker. You know, that whole levy system. It looks like now that this disaster has happened, and they knew they could have fixed it for $14 billion. But now that the disaster has happened, you're talking about a $200 billion, $300 billion market that they can begin and have begun to give out their bids. No, you know, just giveaway contracts, no bid contracts to their friends in the corporate world. You know, they have set up a situation, and they actually have a term for it called controlled chaos, where you know something's going to happen, and it'll be a bigger market if you let it happen than just let it happen and try to control the chaos after it happens. And that, you know, it's kind of obvious now that they're going to make billions and billions and billions of dollars for corporations. Now, one question I have for you. General Motors makes cars. Dow Chemical makes chemicals. What does Halliburton do? It makes money. It don't do anything but make money. You know, they get all those contracts, and then what they do is set up a system of subcontracts. And they just take their billions off of the top and go to the bank. That's all they do. So the one thing about these three issues, though, is that their commonality is that they present us with a teachable moment and a movement-building moment.
This is People's Tribune Radio. Project South Executive Director Jerome Scott has been discussing three fronts of struggle in current U.S. movements: the anti-war struggle, the struggle over immigration, and the mobilization taking place in the Gulf Coast since Hurricane Katrina. Scott now addresses what needs to happen in order for the various fronts to mobilize and unify into a broader movement for social and economic justice.
Many times I'm asked when I go around the country is, where's the movement at now? And what's the process? I'd like to take a stab at that question. We at Project South think that the movement goes through stages of its development. And those stages are consciousness, vision, and strategy. And our analysis tells us that the movement today is in the consciousness stage. We're still trying to figure out, you know, in that consciousness stage, who are our enemies and who are our friends? Who do we have to build the bridges with, and who do we have to build relationships with in order to get enough critically thinking people on the same page? What are the root causes of what we're dealing with? You know, like, is the cause of what we're dealing with the immigrant community, like they want to tell us? Or is it the very roots of capitalism? Who hired those immigrants? We didn't hire them. Who fired us? We didn't fire ourselves. It was the corporations working in cahoots with our government that set this whole thing up. So that's not the root, you know, so the immigrant community is not the root cause. Our corporate structure and our government is the root cause. And deeper than that, it's the whole way that capitalism is set up in the first place, you know, based on this whole thing of maximum profit. So we got to begin to talk about all those things in this stage of consciousness development. And we really do believe that at some point over the last 5 years, some people around the country began to cross over into the vision stage of the development of the movement. Now, the vision stage is a really, really critical stage of the development of this movement, because we talk so much about what we're against. You know, we're against the corporations. We're against capitalism. We have to begin to talk about what we're for. What kind of world do we want to live in? Do we want for our kids and our grandkids and our great-grandkids? What would that world look like? Would we still have a world where poverty is growing throughout the world and in the richest country in the world? Would we have a world with homelessness and hunger, where you had to pay for your health care or get turned away at some hospitals for not having insurance? Would our world be free of that? Would our world have an education process that really, truly educated our children, as opposed to the education system being used as a route from school to jail? You know, so then, if we don't want all those things, what would that world look like? And how would we organize our economy and our political structure? We need to have literally millions of people out there talking about their vision. Because until we get a critical mass of people in this country looking at the same vision, looking in the same direction, we won't be able to get to that next stage of the development of the movement, which is strategy. You know, how can we make plans? How can we have a strategy if we don't have a common vision? I think that would be almost impossible. That's one of the reasons why when people look at the movement today, they wonder what's happening, because there's not a common vision there. And therefore, it's hard to even talk about strategy. But so we got to make sure that we develop these three stages and get to strategy so that we can have a chance at building the kind of movement in this country that can be powerful enough to really oppose the decisions both on the national level and the international level that is presently being made so that we can really fight for a peaceful world. We have to develop this movement. And when you think about a movement in this country, it's got to be huge. You know, we're talking about millions and millions and millions of people. So therefore, in this stage of developing consciousness, for us, the lead thing that we have to do is concentrate on developing leaders. And how do you do that? Well, we have to educate ourselves. We have to be politically and economically educated about how this world functions now, not how it functioned 50 years ago, but how does it function now? We got to have a grasp on history, you know, because a lot of people were surprised when they saw those pictures on the TV on the Gulf Coast where people were just being left. Well, that's not the first time that has happened. It happens over and over and over again. We got to understand that a country and a system that would allow for the genocide of the native people, would allow for the enslavement of the African people, would allow for the attack on the immigrants throughout the history, we got to realize that this government and this system is capable of any and every tragedy and horrible thing to be done, any and every. Its history proves that. So we have to get a grasp of history in order to be able to look toward the future and see exactly how we're going to ensure that this developing movement goes in the correct direction. So leadership development, and you can do that anywhere. You can do leadership development in your community. You can do leadership development in your workplace. Whatever kind of movement or front of struggle that you are a part of, one of your main things should be developing leaders. Because the movement is going to break out. You know, it's going to go gradual, 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 and then it's going to break out. When it breaks out, we got to ensure that there's enough knowledgeable leaders so that that movement will go in the right direction. Because, you know, like I know, we're not the only ones sitting around having these discussions. You know, there are literally thousands of people on the right that are having these same kinds of discussions. And they're looking for, when that movement breaks out, to take it toward fascism, not toward, you know, a direction that's going to reorganize this country, you know, so that people are paid decent wages and people have living conditions that they can survive in. So it's not just us out there fighting. It's us and it's them. And so we got to make sure we do our part. Now, what is the relationship between needing to build this movement and the first U.S. social forum? You know, the World Social Forum process started about 6 years ago in Porto Alegre, Brazil, was the first one. And they had about 20,000 people at that very first one. Well, year after year, the World Social Forum has grown. It's at a point now, the one this year, but the one the year before in Porto Alegre had about 150,000 people added. 150,000 people. The one this year, they had a polycentric social forum, and one was in Venezuela and Pakistan and someplace in Africa. And I went to the one in Venezuela, and they said it was about 80,000 people at the one in Venezuela. My only point here is that this process is spreading around the world very rapidly. And you can only imagine why every other major country in the world has had a social forum except the United States. You can just imagine. And so part of why it has taken so long is that Project South is part of a network around the country called the Grassroots Global Justice Network, who have organized delegations to the World Social Forum over the last 4 years. And the World Council of the World Social Forum has been asking us to pull together a U.S. social forum for a number of years. And we've resisted because we wanted to ensure that the base of any U.S. social forum be made up of low-income, people of color-led organizations. And it took us that 4 years to try to get enough base so that we thought, okay, we can go with it. And that's why we decided to go with it for, well, we originally started to go with it for 06, but then Katrina and the Gulf Coast changed all that. So it's in 07 now. And we really fought hard for it to be in the South, you know, because the South has historically been critically important to the development of a movement in this country, and it is still critically important to the development of a movement in this country. And so we were very happy when they decided that we would have it in Atlanta, Georgia, in 07. We want all y'all there. We think that if you look at this convergence of just these three fronts of struggle, you're looking at the possibility of the social forum acting as a catalyst for the convergence of those three fronts of struggle. That's what we think can happen. We know it's going to take a lot of work, but that's the moment that we're fighting in, and that's the moment that we have to take advantage of, this teachable movement-building moment. So that's the relationship that we feel the social forum will have on this developing movement in this country. The last question that I would put to you is, what are we prepared to do? How much are we prepared to fight to make sure that these fronts of struggle have bridges built between them, and to make sure that we develop leadership within all those fronts of struggle so that we'll be ready when the leap comes? What are we prepared to do? Thank you.
What will we do when the leap comes? The leap being that point in time when a sudden jump occurs in society, a social transformation from one stage to another, Jerome Scott's question is important to ponder and prepare for. Think about the atrocities taking place in our communities today: war, violence, extreme consumption. As we begin to look around and become aware of the control corporations have over our lives, we're forced into action. For many, that action is to resist and confront what is destroying their communities. Whether the war, corporate takeovers, the criminalization of immigrants, these factors are part of a system. The capitalist system that is partially responsible for the advancement of our communities is destroying them at a rapid pace. People are developing strategies to overcome this system that favors profits over people. They're creating a vision for their communities, a vision for a better world, a world with no war, where workers are not pitted against one another in order to decrease wages, a place where healthcare and the best education are available to everyone. A better world is possible, and it will take all of us struggling and building to make it happen. People's Tribune Radio is not quite over yet. I'm going to begin to end the show, but we'll close out with a spoken word piece from Mama Brenda Matthews. We'd like to thank Heroico Pateon de San Patricio for organizing the event and the Capitol Theater in Olympia for allowing us to record it. Every month, PT Radio, in association with the newspaper People's Tribune, the bilingual magazine Tribuno del Pueblo, and Speakers for a New America, attempts to share with you information and visions for a cooperative society where everyone can have a proper quality of life. To find out more information, please call 1-800-691-6888. Once again, that's 800-691-6888. Also visit us on the web, www.ptradio.org. I'm Kenny Shook. Thanks for listening in, but don't turn off the show yet. We're going to close the show with some spoken word from Mama Brenda Matthews. The piece is called Ghetto Girls.
Ghetto girl. Ghetto girl, where you at?
Where you at, girl?
I'm calling for all the hoochies, the hood rats, the chicken heads, the bust downs, and the runners. This piece is for all the haters who always talked about ghetto girl but never took the time to really understand her. Ghetto girl, I'm calling for you, girl. Where you at? This is my sisters who've been labeled by certain brothers. Here we go, it's like this. Hey, amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. Ah! every shade of the chocolate rainbow. My brothers, this is the place where you can taste the rainbows. Sweet sunshine. She's a ghetto girl. Tight jeans, a big butt, long nails, and her baby daddy is always tripping. She's smart as a whip and fast on her feet, making a fool out of brothers, always, always taking their money. In other words, shorty is a pimp. So brother, if you don't know the game, you too will get played. Ghetto girl got a story. Her mama was a runner who never had no time for her, and her daddy never stayed at the joint long enough to get to know her. But don't get it twisted, ghetto girl, she ain't looking for sympathy. She ain't trying to be the poster child, looking for help from all the hypocrites who watched her grow up in her community. No, ghetto girl got dreams. She wants to go far. She wants to become a ghetto superstar, looking for love in all the wrong places. Ghetto girl don't care what you think. She'll use her link card to get what she needs. Don't tell her about her cheddar. She says, I know what's better for me and mine. So mind your own business and stay the hell out of mine. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved the wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see she's a ghetto girl. She might be rolling trees, sipping on hands with her friends, tasting hypnotic while playing spades, eating chicken wings while Mary J. Blige sings. No more drama. She likes brothers with SUVs, Escalades, sitting on 24s with spinners. Girlfriends got dreams. She's got her own vision. In her mind, life is short, so do now and think later. She is who she is, so love her or hate her, cause it doesn't matter what you think. She is a sister, a she is a daughter, she is still a child of Mother Africa. So before you judge her, look in the mirror and judge yourself first. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. Ah, once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see she's a ghetto girl. What does it take to see the beauty of a pearl? How do we nurture tulips that blossom in springtime, or watch roses bloom in the summertime? Ghetto girl, she is a mother. She's Lakeisha down on 16th Street on the west side. She's Gwinnetta down on 63rd and Ashland in Inglewood. Ghetto girl, making the same mistakes as you and me. The only difference between us is God's amazing grace. That's the only thing between us. God's amazing God's grace. Amazing grace. Amazing. Ghetto girl, where you at, where sister? You at, girl? This goes out for all my sisters who've been